It's Monday, April 29th. Greetings from Podcastville. The church is brought to you by 23andMe. This Mother's Day, for a limited time only, 23andMe is taking off $30 off the Health and Ancestry Kit until May 13th. A 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit is the perfect gift for Mother's Day. Celebrate what makes mom special with personalized genetic insights on her health, traits, and more. With the Health and Ancestry Kit, you and your mom can celebrate your genetic similarities and differences as you explore your shared connections with over 125 personalized genetic reports on health, traits, and more. I don't have a mother, but if I had a mother, this is what I'd be doing. You understand me? This Mother's Day, the church gets 30% off 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit at 23andme.com/church. Again, that's 23andme.com/church. And again, that's 23andme.com/church. Offer ends May 13th. The church is also brought to you by the goods, the Gitas, my people, CBDLion.com. For all your CBD needs, CBD Lion is there for you. Whether vapor, the tinctures, the gummies, CBD Lion is there for you. So right now, go to CBD Lion and look at the third-party test results. You're going to like what you see. I live on this stuff. Right now, press in church on the way out and get 10% off. Better yet, I'm going to give you 20% off your first order. That's how Uncle Joey rolls on a fucking Monday morning, all right? So go to CBDLion.com. The church is also you brought to you, again, I don't have a mother, but if I had a mother, I'd be on point and send all this great stuff to her. This is something you cannot turn down. Pro Flowers. Don't forget to thank the real pros in your life. It's Mother's Day. Your mother is the real hero in your life. It's coming up May 12th. Do not forget that. Where would you be without your mom? Where would you be? Nowhere. Pro Flowers is here to help you show your appreciation this year. And right now, get a dozen assorted roses for $19.99 and double the roses and get a premium vase for $9.99 more. Who helps you? Who does you like Uncle Joey? Nobody. So visit proflowers.com right now. Click the microphone in the upper right corner, right there in the corner, and enter promo code HAPPENING. That's proflowers.com. Click the microphone on the right corner and use promo code HAPPENING. Mother's Day is May 12th, so do not wait. Order like a pro and get this amazing rose deal to thank all the moms in your life. Now, I'm still in New York City. I'm still slinging dick, but the podcast is coming at you. Kick this motherfucking mule, Lee. Oh, shit. It's your type of day, motherfuckers. Churchill, what's happening now? Here you go. You were looking for a fucking up. Here you go, cocksuckers. There you go. Get that motherfucker out. Watch that monkey. It's a new day, motherfuckers. Tammy Pascatelli, the Christ Killer, Lisa Ayak, and your Uncle Joey. It's a beautiful motherfucking day to be alive. What's the story, Tammy P?
We're chair dancing. That's what it is.
Where the fuck you been?
Oh, man. Everywhere.
I haven't seen you in how long?
I miss you, my brother.
I know. How long haven't I seen you?
Maybe 10 years.
That's how long?
No, I don't know. I think I've seen you. I think I ran into you once or twice in the store, but when I left L.A. and then you got big.
What year did you leave L.A.?
2008. The beginning of 2008.
2008.
Yeah.
I was just starting to pick myself up again. I'd been off the drugs for a year.
Yeah, you were doing good.
And I was doing okay. At least I was off the drugs. That was the main thing. And I think I got married in 2009, 2010. And you moved. You had a child?
Yeah. So we got out of L.A.
You wanted to give him a fair chance.
Yeah.
To live around these fucking Harvey Weinstein, Jesse Smollett's college.
The rest.
Fucking admissions. It's just Never Never Land.
The man who walked by with a suit and a
Cosby,
Superman cape.
You have to just one day look and go, what the fuck? you know, I was in New York for a few days, and I'm driving up to 405, and I'm looking at the sunlight, and I'm like, you know, there's nothing like this place. Mm-mm. But it's great, the sunshine, but you're empty here. You're alone, you know?
Well, and we were, the store was my life.
That's your life.
It was my life, and I love Pauly to death, but I saw what happened when you rate, because that's what would happen. I had had my baby in a bucket in the back, and you guys had been blowing weed in his face at the, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, he would have, that's what happened. Who would have been comics who watched him while I was on stage? Duncan would have had him playing with that stupid ventriloquist dummy.
Yes.
Remember when Duncan used to do that ventriloquist dummy thing?
And somebody stole it. I would fucking be scared to death that that motherfucker was in the hotel. Like, I would
somebody,
put a
you
chair
know who stole it? George stole it.
George
probably. Who? Otto and George.
Otto was dead. I think Otto and George were dead. Somebody fucking stole it from him after a show.
Really?
He put it down somewhere. What was his name?
Little Hobo.
Little Hobo. That thing was the creepiest fucking thing.
Well, what was creepier is that Duncan thought it was that was going to be his hook.
Well, if you look at the whole thing, it was brilliant for Duncan. Just the fact to go up there, take a ventriloquist dummy, put him on your fucking lap, and actually see the people. I mean, he let people see him. He was not a ventriloquist.
Yeah, no.
And he would do that song by Pink Floyd, Wish You Were Here, and then the thing would fucking disintegrate and talk about the devil and satanic messages at the end. It's the mind of Duncan Trussell.
Brilliant.
A lot of people don't have the balls to go up there and do that. First time I saw, even Mitzi Shore was sitting next to me. She's like, what the fuck is he doing? You know, nobody knew what the fuck it was. The more I went out with him on the road and Rogan, I was watching him. I'm like, this is pretty brilliant. And even though he knew he was creeping people out, he didn't give a fuck.
No, he wanted, it was really goes to that level of, I can't think of what his name is. Jim Carrey played him, Man in the Moon. What's his name? I can't think of it right now.
You know what I mean?
Because it was really like he was doing it. He wanted a reaction. And he knew that it was going to create a reaction. It was going to give you a feeling, you know? And some people are going to find it funny. Some people are going to be creepy. But he knew that it was going to solicit a reaction.
That's really
brilliant.
Weird to, you know, when you use comedy like that. Like, after 10 years, you start using comedy the way a boxer uses his jabs and his, you know, uppercuts. You know, that's why I always say every art goes to another art. Even us as comics, we know what the home run is. It's the overhead right.
Well, right.
It's the closer.
Yeah, for sure.
We know what jokes are a jab, and we know what jokes are a body shot, just to fucking loosen you up a little bit. Then they're fucking dropping checks. So we got to hit them with a couple body shots. They don't pay attention to the $80 tab. They just pay it and keep laughing. You know, you learn.
You learn
where to attack, what agitates, what does. I know if I'm bombing and they don't like me because I said something that they didn't flow with, now they're going to get the wrath of God on them.
Yeah, you got a combination.
Now I'm going to fucking just drop everything that I hate. Shit that I wouldn't even say in public around my family. I would say around them. Just
for sure, because if you're going to hate me,
if I'm
going to
walk on ice, you might as well dance.
Yeah.
If you're going to hate me, let me tell you what's really in my heart.
Yeah,
okay?
Right.
If I see you eating hummus, I'm gonna sell you to 10 black guys and have them fuck you in the ass. I hate fucking hummus, and I hate hummus eaters. Especially fucking Americans who eat hummus to be fucking cute. How about I take you over to ISISville and you hang out with those motherfuckers, and then just, if you like hummus, that fucking, you know, you just go off and they look at you. And they fucking, you know, you just lose them or you gain a fan because somebody says, at least the bitch went down in flames.
Yeah, for sure. They always mess with me. There's always one woman, no matter what, even still, who's too old to strip and wants to mess with me in my show. And I'm like, this is how I pay my mortgage. So you're not going to win. You're not, not now, not 25 years in. And there's always someone who tries to mess with you. So you give them. I mean, I always say, I give him an out. It's not going to end the way you think it's going to end in your head. You think that you're going to come out of this cute. I'm going to destroy you. Like, I want to say, when you want to challenge me in the middle of the show, I now, at first I'm giving you the out. But if you keep going, I want to say something that's so bad that you want to go home and kill yourself. You're going to stop every day and remember me. You're going to hate me. You're going to light candles for my death because you're taken from my son. Right? Like, this is all I have. I didn't get cast in stuff. I don't have development deals. All I have is my stand-up, my free speech. that I have 45 minutes to entertain everybody who came, and you can't trick them out of their money twice, right? Once,
yeah.
You can only trick people one time.
It's so weird, especially today with all the choices you have for entertainment.
Yeah, yeah.
And you see young comics that are going on the road and they're not prepared. And you're going to trick people one time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay, you can go do it if you want.
And you can almost trick them a second time, you'll get 50% because some people are stupid. They'll come back a second time and go, oh, maybe it was an off night.
But it's really weird, especially with the entertainment dollar, the amount of comics. You know, last week I was talking to Josh Wolf or something. He goes, I got one of those weekends again. I go, why? He goes, I'm in South Denver. Ron Funches is downtown. Sebastian's at the Paramount.
Yeah.
Bert Kreisch is at the other theater. And then Mark Maron's there on Sunday. He goes, I'm fucking dead. There's a lot of comedy. There's a lot of shit on Netflix. So your game has to be super fucking tight.
Yeah.
So when you go to clubs and somebody fucking heckles you, I have a good presence. And I go up there with a smile on my face. So it's very rare. People just get drunk at my shows. And because of the podcast, they know you. But I don't give them 3 cents.
Yeah, but you know that they're not messing with, like, even right. Me. What happens with me more than likely, nine times out of ten, it's a woman who literally starts trying to be, she thinks we're friends. Woohoo, woo, yeah, woo, high-fiving me when I'm on stage. But she's not getting what she wants when I'm calling it out. You know, if you act like a whore, you're going to be treated like a whore. When I'm saying the things that are not the political correct, when I say, you know, this woman's movement is bullshit because when you take a picture with your friend, you only fix yourself on the Face app and you let your friend hang looking like Shrek and stuff. And then they get mad and then they're like, why aren't you? And then they need the attention. And then that's when it starts where they start saying stuff or trying to. The one lady, I had $20 in my pocket and I said, how much for tickets? And they said, $20. And I go, okay, here's $20 for this time. And I go to the guy in the front. I go, lend me $20. And I took $20 from the guy in front. I go, and the next time I come, here's $20 to don't come back the next time. And I go, if you see me on TV, change a channel. She's like, I'm never coming back. Good. That's exactly what I want. You aren't my audience. I don't want you. I want people who get it and have a sense of humor.
If I went somewhere, like if I go to a restaurant, first of all, I'm not that fucking dumb that I would walk into a restaurant I didn't know nothing about.
Right.
I'm not that fucking stupid. I don't do that. I don't just try out new things because, oh my God, I don't. Unless three solid motherfuckers come up to me, I don't walk in there.
Right, right, right.
I don't want to try nothing. You know what I'm saying? So I would never complain. Like if I went to a restaurant and I made a bad choice and the food sucked, I pay the guy and I walk out. What if it happens to that? Now people got to go home and Yelp it.
Yeah, but I don't care either.
Pictures and all that shit. So I just, it just bewildered me that people go out and try to ruin somebody else's night.
Yeah, like for
they
sure.
Just try to go out. I don't, like I said, Tammy, I don't run into it a lot, I think, because of the presence on stage
or
whatever.
Sure.
In Houston, I did have to throw somebody out. I won't play.
Mm-mm.
I won't, if I won't let it get to plan B. I don't let it get to plan B. If I have to look at you and say, stop embarrassing your girlfriend, bro. Do you know that when I was shooting my special, there was a guy in the front row that didn't want to be there. His girlfriend wanted to be there. And he was hammered. And the whole time he was causing problems in the front row.
Yeah.
And there was a point in the special where I turned into De Niro and the family. I saw my future and my fate. And I just saw me kicking him in the jaw, breaking his jaw. And the camera shutting off. And, you know, and then they would have it on tape. I looked at all this shit, all the scenarios. And I gave him a look like, I'm going to fucking kill you. And then the guy next to me said something to him. And I turned around and it went. And after that, it was tolerable.
Well, that's what's hard is sometimes what people don't get is from our position on stage, if you're being a dick, I can see the people around you reacting to that. Now, especially like my audience, tickets anywhere go from like 20, 25 bucks, right? People don't make that in an hour, some people, right? So they got to buy two tickets. They got to get a sitter. They maybe buy drinks. Sometimes there's 2-drink minimum. There's dinner. They work for a day and a half to come see my show. I got to honor that. Because if I allow some drunken asshole to take away from my show, they're never coming back. I got to feed my family. right? I need them to come. I need them people. I know those people to come back and bring two friends with them next time.
How much are you traveling now?
Anywhere from 4 to 17 days a month. Depends on what I have a nut I have to cover, and that's what I do because I try to balance it out. My kid's 11. I need to be there at his play. I need to, like, he's my priority, but he functions because of comedy.
Who watches him when you're on the road? Mom?
Mom, dad, my husband, yeah. Luca's a great dad. I got big Luca and little Luca. Right. He's a phenomenal dad. Yeah, phenomenal. They're like buddies. It's like being at a frat house.
Your husband's a very sweet guy.
Super.
Your husband was always, I had a lot of good laughs with him at the store. You know, to explain Tammy Pascatelli to a lot of people, she's been on the podcast for the first time. Tammy and me grew up at the store. We were kids. Me, yourself, Sebastian, Brett Ernst, you know, Ari. There was just a couple of us.
Yeah.
And you were one of the guys. You have to see Burn. You know, you have to, it's tough for a woman to fit in. But for some reason, everybody has accepted you. You're one of the guys. Yes, you did talk sports.
Yeah.
So that made your plight a lot easier.
Yeah, well, I needed it.
I think you even gambled from time to time. Well,
don't you remember?
Yeah.
Well, I got nervous when they made that movie, Molly's Game, because I was the one teaching all those big A-list, you know, pansy something. Guys. I was teaching them how to play poker.
Is that what you did?
I'm not going to say who, but yeah, I taught some of those big A-list people that.
But you play poker. I know you did something.
I won that poker tournament on TV. I beat all of the celebrities and I lost, and all of the pros, except I lost to the Unabomber, who was like the champion. You know, what do they call that poker tournament?
I'm getting the World old. Poker Tour?
I don't know, but I guess.
How long have you been playing poker for?
About 20 years. I just had started a little bit before, but I'm Italian. I'm great at the bluff. And then I learned some skills by playing. The more you play against people who are good, you learn. And so then I started teaching some of those no personality A-listers who wanted that. That was my side hustle. They would pay me to come over and teach them. And so when that movie Molly's Game came out, I was like, oh shit, I had to quick get the book, make sure that nothing was in there about me. Cause I got, then there's, everything was above board. Let's just say that, okay? If anybody from the IRS is listening, it was all legal, FBI, DA, RICO, whatever.
You were just teaching people how to play poker.
That's it, man.
People do it all the fucking time. I mean, it was no
You can learn. I was an app. I was a human being app.
But it was more played out in Ocean's 8. Ocean's 11 was where Brad Pitt was playing over in Hollywood behind where we lived. That's where the game was. That's where they shot that movie.
They shot that, but there was a different one.
Right. When, Molly's Game. Yeah, yeah, I saw Molly's
Game. Yeah, there was a different one, but I don't know if I should, you know.
But the one that Ocean's 11 in the beginning, he's playing a poker game with a couple celebrities.
No, yeah.
The kids from fucking whatever.
And that's kind of the scenario.
That was the scenario.
Yeah, and I think there was something too, and you know, we went through this, was they wanted to laugh. A lot of the higher up the celebrity, sometimes they don't have, they're great actors, because they don't have personalities to fill the void inside that they can act, because there's nothing there to be. So they always want to be around a personality that's loud and fun. And then we just had a good time. That was good to play poker. But all of us, we were family, man. I was just saying to you, like, I remember September 11th happened. I called back home to make sure everybody was okay. And then I was like, I just cannot wait to get to the store tonight, because we had to come together as a family. And that night, me, you, Ari, everybody came there. And then other people that we hadn't seen in years. That's when Roseanne came down and Dice came. Like, people came down because we just sat there. And there was nobody in the audience.
It's so funny how September 11th was on a Tuesday. And that Monday, I was at the store.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Mooney came in.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sitting watching Paul Mooney. And Paul Mooney's talking about how they're not going to let no nigga break the home run record. That's when it was the white dude and the black dude.
McGuire and Sosa
going for the home run record.
Yeah.
And he kept saying, they ain't going to let that Negro break the record. I'm telling you, something's going to happen.
Was it him or Barry Bonds?
Barry Bonds. I'm sorry. Yeah. It was Barry Bonds.
Sosa's white now anyway.
He kept saying, they're not going to let that little nigga break the home run record. And I'm in the back of the stage fucking howling. And he keeps saying this. He goes, you mark my words.
this because that was the last week of the season or something like that. Something was going on.
It was close to it.
It was close to it. And he kept saying, they're not going to let that Negro break the home run record. And it went into my head. I went home that night. I'm sleeping. And the next morning, Terry's yelling, oh, my God. Oh, no. And I go, what's going on? She goes, they just tore down the first tower. A plane went into it. And in my head, I heard Paul Mooney going, I'm telling you, they ain't going to let that little nigga break the home run. Because all the games canceled that day. Look it up. Every game got canceled that day. I was dying of laughter. I'm like, fucking Paul Mooney was right. They even blew up a building so they wouldn't let that black man break the home run record. They want the one. Did he beat him that year? It was Barry Bonds against the guy from St. Louis.
Really? It was Mark McGwire?
It was Mark McGwire.
Yeah, it was Mark McGwire.
Yeah, okay. It was Mark McGwire.
Did Barry Bonds break the record? I don't know. Let me check.
You know, it's so funny how if you compare the store then to now, we were a tighter bunch back then.
There were less of us, for sure.
We needed to be tighter because there was really nothing going on down there. You know, for people who listen to the podcast and all the other podcasts, we all talk about the store and how it's packed. At this time, the store was the number three club.
Mm-hmm.
There was
really?
There was 10 people. There would be 80 on a Sunday, 30 on a Monday, 8 on a Tuesday, because it was Black Night in the main room.
Mm-hmm.
So white people got the word out, and the only people who would come in was the only people who would come in is people who were next door at the hotel.
And didn't know.
If you had 10 people in the original room on a Tuesday, 10 people, you were happy. I remember them holding off. It was 4 to start the show. And
anybody there?
Running an hour late.
Yeah.
So don't even worry about
it.
Like, we'd be at the whatever. Wednesday nights, it'd be 35 people. Thursday nights, it'd be like 105.
Yeah. You'd make money in the, your money night was
Friday and Saturday in the main room.
Yeah, that was
everything else was $15. But then we went through the no alcohol spell.
Yeah, it was Pauly crazy. Shaw messed up the liquor license.
Pauly Shaw messed up the liquor license, so there was no alcohol at the store. For fucking 7 weeks, people. No alcohol till December 30th.
Yeah, because they had December just 30th. Snuck it in for
so
New Year's
think
Eve.
About going to the comedy store, eating a fucking Gorilla Biscuit. You go to the thing, you pay $20, and you got to drink fucking soda. I don't even think it was BYOB.
No. You weren't allowed.
For 7 weeks, you had to sit at the fucking comedy store like a deaf mute, fucking looking at 8 comics, and people hated it. And the fun, there was so many little things going on. Like one of the nights I remember Holtzman on stage, and Vinny Favorito took a fart machine and hit it in the third row. And we all sat in the back. And every time Holtzman
buzzer.
Would yell,
he, hit a remote
he would
fart.
Hit the buzzer. And fucking Holtzman started going, who the fuck is that? You got stomach problems.
You're gonna die.
You're gonna die.
He goes, you're gonna die.
Stop farting.
You need to go to the emergency room.
You know, you didn't know when Mitzi Shaw was gonna come down.
And that was like,
she would scare the fuck out of you.
Here's what I remember. So, just to know, Lee, I came from the improv world. I was already, I was like a split week headliner when I first got to the store. Where people would show up at the club and go, we don't know who she is, but we already have a sitter, like out on the road. But when I get to the store and I get passed at the store, I'm meeting these guys and they're nobody that I've met on the road. But you realize that this was the place where the energy was. This was the place where people were working. When you go to the improv, they were doing, or the Laugh Factory, they were doing their 7-minute showcase set. No industry came to the comedy store.
None. Wouldn't even go. Even if they wanted to sign you, you go, I got a showcase at the store. Ew.
Yeah.
No, there's no food. There's no parking.
So you
don't go to the store.
You could grow at the store. At the store, and that's what Mitzi wanted. She wanted you to be able to try new material and grow. She wanted it like an artist colony. So I'll never forget that first night that I went to audition for her, right? And you were hosting. And I was already a little, like, I you know the story where Rick Messina had called me and said, go down because she needs a chick for Night of 1,000 Guidos. And she didn't show up that night, whatever was going on. So the next week I came back and you were hosting again. And no one was paying attention to me. You were the only person who was nice to me. And I went on stage and I had a good set. And Mitzi called me back. She was in the back. And she made whoever was sitting next to her, Ahmed or whoever it was, get up. And she kind of held on to me for about 45 minutes while all these other people auditioned. And she would speak to me every once in a while, say something. You're good. You're really, this is going to be your home. I'm going to. And I got up out of that chair. And all of a sudden, I had all these new friends because everybody wanted to know what Mitzi said. And then I stayed up all night and prayed and lit candles for her because I was afraid she was going to die before she told Tommy to put me on the line. Because I thought she was going to die.
But you were there way before Tommy.
Oh, maybe it was Duncan.
Yeah, you were there way before Tommy.
You're right. Maybe it was Duncan. Who was? I feel like there was somebody before. Yeah, that's what it was. Princess Corey. She was, what's his name's wife?
Freddie Soto's wife.
Freddie's wife. God rest his soul. Yeah, that was, we went through a lot together. That was, we really, I remember making Italian, I'm not a cook, but making Italian wedding soup, putting it together like a pauper and bringing it down to the store so we could all have something to eat. You remember those days? I remember breaking up with a boyfriend and I had like a few shirts that I was going to give him for Christmas. Sebastian and Brett will tell you the story. And I pulled up and opened up the trunk and I was like, get what you guys want. pick out, because what was I going to do? I couldn't return them. I got them. So everybody got a shirt. And, you know, we were just like a ragtag bunch. We were the Bad News Bears.
How I became friends with Andrew was because of your husband.
Yeah?
Because your husband, Mitzi passed your husband, and he used to take out a flamethrower on stage, a flamethrower lighter. He would put in that black jacket.
Yeah, yeah.
And he would take a flamethrower and light a cigarette and put it back in his pocket. And he would say he was the second in command of the Gambino crime family. Luca was saying some crazy shit on stage. So one night, Dice was down there, and he walks past the thing, and he looks at Luca, and his fucking face turns red. And I didn't talk to Dice back then.
Yeah, well,
Dice was down there for about a year, and I never said nothing to him. Not a word, not a hello. He'd sit out there with his cousin.
And sit on the step.
On the steps.
And then, and I said, Dice would kidnap conversation you.
Kill you.
If you had a conversation, we used to have, God bless Andrew, but we used to have a signal for you to come rescue me from Dice.
It was crazy. But at this time, I did not talk to him. So one night, it's like 11:45, I had just gotten off stage, and Dice is in the back arguing with Scott. Scott Day. That your husband, Luca, and Marino were stealing his spirit on stage.
Yeah.
And it's not fucking right. They got to go.
That's who they are, you asshole.
And I'm sitting there, and I, you know, Dice inspired me. Who I do on stage is Dice. So I was feeling like pressured. And finally, him and Scott are arguing, and I said, excuse me for a second. I go, Andrew, I don't know you. But I go, when somebody starts, for the first 3 years, they emulate who their favorite comic is. It's just a natural thing. You'll have different things from Bill Hicks or maybe a yell like Kennison. You emulate somebody else until you get your voice. And once your voice comes out, all that skin sheds. I go, you got to cut these guys a break.
Plus, they really were from Brooklyn and New Jersey and Italian.
And he's going off. He's like, no, fuck that. Da, 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 da. And you know what? I got my car. I didn't argue with him. I didn't want to start a fight. I loved Dice. And then I fucking, the next day, he called my house and he goes, you were absolutely right. You know,
yeah.
I didn't even look at it that way. I go, it's a form of flattery.
Yeah.
People are going to do it all the time. You know, I work at comics. By the fucking Saturday, they're saying cocksucker.
Right?
Why are you saying cocksucker?
Yeah, you don't say that.
Stepping on my shit. Don't say that. But it just comes natural. It's just a it's just a thing that when you people peel off on people, it's not the kid's fault. It's just that you're trying to find your voice.
Yeah.
You know? And that's how we became friends. But I always love Luca. When did you and him get together?
So I don't know if you know the story really, but the fact is I never dated comics.
Right. No, you were anti-comic.
Because I didn't want anybody to ever say, oh, that's how she got that. And plus, I know guys. I mean, don't forget.
You were dating like athletes.
I was.
You were high priced ass and shit.
Yeah,
you ain't fucking around.
Should have locked that down.
They were picking you up in Maseratis and shit.
Should have locked that stuff down before.
Tammy wasn't fucking around.
Now I'm living in Meadville, Pennsylvania, working at a mechanic's garage.
You were dating a baseball player. Tammy wasn't fucking around. Stallion. Tammy was.
I was stallion.
Stealing hearts and minds and shit.
But, you know, I also would go on the road, and I knew that if I was in a condo, because I'd have to go on the road with two other dudes. Sometimes I didn't know them. And I knew that if I dated one, that the other one would be like, oh, yeah, I fucked her. And you didn't. But I could never be able to prove it, like, once that goes. So I decided I wouldn't date any comics and then figure it out from there. But then I met Luca through that stripper colony that I lived in. Do you remember when I lived in that stripper colony?
No.
You got to remember when I lived. You came over to my house for a couple of parties.
Where?
I lived behind the Dime on North Orange Grove. And I lived in a 6-unit apartment building, right? And it was like me and this young, upwardly mobile black attorney and 4 strippers in various stages of their careers. And I got really busy. That's when Last Comic came out and stuff. And who else has Mondays off besides comics? Strippers. So as long as I had money for dinner, I had friends. So I had different groups of the... So, and there was all... I mean, I think they made me more of a girl, those strippers. Because I was one of you guys. Like you said, I was one of the boys. I was a dude. I was like Joe Polnicek. You know what I mean? I was scratching balls and everything, basically. And they made me softer. You know, don't you remember the story? I said, Joey, this girl just... You might have been high at that time, but I know you know this story because I was moving into my apartment, right? And I'm struggling and I'm trying to get this thing in. And this girl, this beautiful girl, comes walking up the driveway. And she sees me struggling and she doesn't help me, nothing. But she's got this bag. And all of a sudden, this guy comes in the driveway and he's like, hey, where are you going? And she throws her bag at me. And I'm like, what the shit? Here, she was like, oh, I'm helping her move. I don't know this girl, but I'm who I am. So I just kind of went, oh, yeah, hey, how you doing? She went off with her boyfriend and left the bag with me. When she came back, I didn't even open it because I don't, $10,000 in cash because she had went with some sheikh. Remember the sheikhs that used to invite people over? And I told you, you said, I would have taken that motherfucker. I would have taken all, don't ever, if there's a bag in your house, call me. I'll fucking open it for you. That's what you said to me. Yeah. So anyway, one of the strippers upstairs was dating his roommate. And they were on the phone. She was on the phone with this dude I didn't know. And she said, what are you and Luca doing? And I said, is that Luca Polanco from the Comedy Store? Because I had never really met him. He went home to be with his father who was dying and I was busy. And then that was it. But I came to you guys and said, I'm like, I'm dating him. What do you think? And you're like, he's a good dude.
He's a sweetheart. Yeah. Always a sweetheart.
Yeah.
Always trying to get you in a movie. Like the last conversation I had with him, he had a camping movie with the chick who played Patril.
Yeah, yeah.
Jackie Aprile's wife.
Mm-hmm. And, Sharon Angela.
And he had something. He always had something fucking cooking. You know what I'm saying? Whether it came up or not, it didn't matter because he was always hustling, you know? And then you guys got married or you guys just left. But I knew you, I saw you on different calendars.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You were always on different. You were still on the road and stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know what else I was thinking about? I've always been one of those guys that when I get off stage, there's really nice comics that come up to me and say, hey, you should throw a tag on this. Do you remember the story time Pescatelli? So for years, I wouldn't take tags. And one night, I'm up there killing, and I get off stage, and Tammy goes, why don't you say... Oh my God. Why are you so fat? What am I cutting the coke with, butter? And I didn't say it for like a week or two. And then one night I said it and it got a laugh. I forgot all about it. I was dying and I needed something to get me out of it. And I'm saying the joke now. You know how I do material.
Yeah.
Sometimes I do it, sometimes I don't.
Yeah.
And you'll come to me afterward and say, you forgot to say it. And I go, no. Mm-hmm. Please, don't fucking remind me. I was using a joke like that. And one night I'm at the store. And I don't know anybody. And I'm doing the joke. When I get off stage an hour later, Monty Hoffman, God rest his soul.
God rest his soul.
Comes up to me. Like, he wasn't...
He wasn't in his right mind.
He wasn't mad at this time. He goes, hey, I just want to tell you that I was doing that joke for a long fucking time. And I hope you didn't see me and steal it. I go, first of all, if you know anything about me, I'm not a joke thief.
Right.
I go, I didn't steal it from you. And I didn't say your name or nothing. I just didn't use it. I just said, you know what? That's what I get for using a tag.
Yeah. But I didn't see him. I didn't even know him until 2 years later. So
now, 6 months later, I'm at the Improv. And he comes up to me out of nowhere on a Sunday night. Guys, this is when...
Yeah, this is when you called me.
Don't come up to me, bro. Listen, I'm the type of guy that I'm a great guy. I love, but don't come out of me out of somewhere, especially in public. He comes at me yelling, foaming from the mouth. And what do to dethrone him? I just spit in his fucking face. spit in his face. And now they got to hold him back. And I just point, like, nobody held me back. They go, get the fuck away from me. And the next time I'll break your fucking shoulder or something. I mean, this is when I was doing.
Somehow.
Dog, I was doing major league coke. I was at the end. I was a little pissed off. I wasn't in the mood for fucking games. Nothing was happening for me. And this is the last thing I need. It's this fucking moron telling people I stole his fucking joke from 20 fucking years ago.
Yeah.
The guy was old and I got it. But the night he came and I spit in his face, like 2 weeks later, I find out the guy's got cancer. And now I got to feel bad about it.
He had brain cancer, so he was making bad choices and stuff.
I didn't know he had brain cancer. Yeah.
No, who did?
Nobody fucking knew. So, you know, that night he came up to me, he was saying some pretty fucked up shit, and especially after I spit in his fucking face. He even went fucking crazy.
You went right.
So I go somewhere one night, and there he is with two goons. But the problem was the two goons he had, I saw around town at different auditions for mafia stuff.
Uh-huh.
And the two goons were goons, but
paper goons.
From looking on their eyes, I could tell they were weak.
Yeah, paper goons.
He must have told him who I was, but not what I looked like or whatever. And when the two guys saw me, they kind of like didn't know how to really approach it. Like they were like, do we? Or are we getting ourselves
into it? Well, I didn't know it went that deep.
Oh, yeah. It got into a bad position. I walked in. I kept it together. I go, if they come into my space, I'm fucking them all up. Like, I'm just attacking all three of them. I was still on coke.
Yeah.
I would hit them with a bottle. I'd do whatever the fuck. I didn't give a fuck. I was taking, like, in the words of my brother Lubes, you guys might be stronger than me, but I'm taking something. Finger and eye. Right. I'm taking something with me. So I went. I did it. And then I got a call from my agent. And she goes, you got to, this was when I was with the comedy agency. The lady was Spanish, and she had Trejo and the other dude, who's our friend, Emilio Rivera. She had them both, and she was like my sub-agent. So she calls me up, and then she's like, Adam Sandler called for you. You're doing the new fucking whatever movie, and I don't even want to repeat what it says on the sides. And I'm like, okay, it's shot on a Saturday morning.
Yeah.
I get there on Saturday morning. Who's there? Monty Hoffman with the two goons.
Hysterical.
So I had to grab Nick Swanson and tell him, listen, dog, I'm going to tell you this just so you know. I had a beef with Monty, and he brought those two dudes. If it goes down, it's going to go down in here.
That probably got you the part.
I'm not fucking around. I went and got like a pipe and hid it behind my trailer.
Hysterical.
And then my scene was with Monty. I had to sit next to Monty.
He forgot.
I had to walk in with Don Johnson and then take a seat next to Monty. And we had to make believe like we were friends and shit. It was fucking cruel. And
that's
then
weird.
I left. Nothing happened with the two dudes. The two dudes would look at me to see if I would make a move. And I would just look at them both and keep walking. And then I heard he died.
I didn't know it was that deep. Now, what if you remember, though, it wasn't when you got off stage. We were talking in the parking lot. And you were saying, I can't lose any weight. I'm doing blow all the time. I'm shitting all the time. I'm doing blow. I blow it out. I can't lose it. And I go, well, what are you cutting it with, butter? And then you go, I'm going to use that. And I'm like, okay, I don't. That's what it was. It wasn't
cutting it with butter.
Yeah, so it wasn't. I never saw him. I don't know Monty Hoffman, you know.
Did he ever call you?
He did call, because he called the night after the improv, and he was like, he said that you gave it to him. And I said, I don't know. We were talking. I don't know that we were trying to. But I go, if Joey says I gave it to him, I gave it to him, because I'm not.
He stole it from you, bro.
Yeah, like.
I felt terrible.
Yeah, I said, if Joey says I gave it to him, I gave it to him. Joey's not going to just say that. Joey's not going to, you know. And I go, but it, Monty, that if that's a joke, it's not.
Nobody spits in my face. He kept saying, nobody spits in my face. Like, I just did. I just did. Now get the fuck away from me. Three guys were holding him. The management, the improv told me to get on stage, not to get on stage. I go, listen, I didn't do anything. Did you see my hands get raised? Did you see anything happen?
Yeah.
No. I'm going on stage.
I spit when I talk.
He came over. He tried to accuse me, and I caught him right in the face and the mouth. He was wiping it and spitting it out of his mouth. It was fucking hilarious. But God rest.
Meanwhile, I'm at home. I don't even know anything. I don't even know this stuff.
You know, the store at that time was tough. It was tough.
For sure.
You were angry. You know, you were getting bumped every night by Eddie, Dice.
All of us, yeah.
Fucking Gary Shanley.
And it would go on for two and a half hours.
You were frustrated. You know, you're frustrated. You have a right at one point. You were frustrated. I still remember Steve Renazzisi frustrated. Everybody in comedy at one point says, what the fuck am I doing with my life? But guess what? I'm already at the store.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm already here.
But this is where I always get mad. And I think sometimes it comes on me a little bit more because I'm a woman. Someone will say that you're jealous of someone else's success. That is not how we were brought up. Our group of friends, our clique, every time somebody got something, we would celebrate it. I remember coming after my first Tonight Show, watching it out front, all of us together. Bobby Lee, we'd get together, watch Mad TV out there. We supported each other. It was hopeful for us. Like I said, Slave were never upset when one got away. That's how it was for us. When someone busted through that line and had some success, we were always happy for them. Nobody was jealous because we were all in that team together, I think. And I mean, I don't know what goes on now. I think now, because a lot of the people aren't, you know, grinding every night, they're social media comics, they're coming through. So maybe there is jealousy. They didn't have a camaraderie that we had.
I still have my camaraderie with a couple people at the store. I'm going down there tonight. I'm excited.
Yeah. Well, I don't mean just the store. I mean comedy in general, too.
Comedy in general is always going to have complainers. You're always going to have people who felt, you know, people will tell themselves anything to make themselves feel better.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. If you want to tell me that you didn't have a career because Rodney Dangerfield took your career away because you were doing Rodney impersonations, if that's what makes you feel good.
Right.
Then say it. If you want to say that Joey Diaz fucking got you thrown out of the store and you can't have a career, if that's what makes you feel good, you're going to say it. None of those things ever made me feel good. The only thing that made me feel good was knowing I did the work.
Well, comedy solo. So really, it's nobody solo. Else has any influence on you. It's you know solo. What I mean? It's like you're in that ring by yourself. Like it's on you. That's why I think we related a lot to, I think, when the mixed martial arts, that's the other thing you and I and Joe always bonded on. Because if you remember, like Pat Miletich was a friend of mine and a trainer for me for a while. And that's when the UFC started. We were all part of that. We all went to those fights when they first were starting. It was hard. The UFC has done what the Comedy Store has done. Like, it's become commercial. Like, and that's great. You love to see the growth of that. But we related to that because it's just one-on-one. If you fail, you fail. It's not the audience's fault. It's not the other comic's fault. If you succeed, that's on you. Like, that's your credit. You've worked hard for that, you know? It was just a different time.
What do you think it is about comedy that either, like, you guys are best friends that, like closer than family, or you're beating each other? Like, it seems like a weird, I don't know if any other industry has that. Maybe they do, but, like, what about comedy does that?
Listen, man, I've said it 1,000 times. As a fan, as a comic, as a human being, there's comics you're not going to like, and there's comics that you like, okay? There's people that you like and there's people that you don't like.
Yeah, and I'll tell you something else. There's a big difference. And here's the difference now versus then, I think. This is my opinion. Granted, I'm old. I'm 25 years. I'm a monologist. You have to figure out if you want to be a comic or you want to be famous. That's it. We didn't necessarily want to be famous. We wanted the respect of other comics.
I wanted to be a comic.
I wanted to be a comic. That's one of my problems, is that I never thought past being a comedian, right? I never thought, I never made moves that would have helped my career. I made moves sometimes that hurt my career because they weren't genuine. I wanted the comics to respect me. I figured if I get my friends to respect
me, that's all you need.
That's good enough.
Nobody was giving me nothing.
Yeah.
I was only a regular at the store. The Laugh Factory didn't want me in there.
Yeah.
And the Improv would give me a spot once a week, if that, the black show, the Latino show, something. Yeah. I was sleeping in my car. You know, I was living off of Ralphie May in the little apartment. Mm-hmm. All of us were all fucking giving each other whatever we could. It was like you were in a gang, but not really. My balloon busted when the Joe Rogan thing went down.
Mm-hmm.
That's when my balloon busted as far as me thinking I was part of something. I always thought I was part of a big picture. I always thought that I look at Tammy, it's like where I grew up. I don't have to explain nothing to you, Tammy.
Yeah.
I walk in the door and I tell you to grab a bat. And you take and the go. Jacket and we go. I don't have to tell you a reason. You know in your heart that if you smack somebody in the fucking head, it's they got it well worth it.
Yeah.
That's how I was raised.
The 3 a.m. friend, me, that's it.
You know, did you watch Dirt?
Yes, did I did watch Dirt. Dirt. Yeah.
When he hits that dude with the guitar,
so
smash
funny.
Him around the face.
And the other ones just look at him.
And everybody looks at you. This is what life is about.
Well,
this is who made me. I stuck up for Anthony Balzano in the 8th grade. And the next thing you know, I was in an Italian's house. And they were calling me our favorite spick. And I was eating pasta.
Right.
You learn to stick up for people.
Yeah,
regardless
for sure.
Regardless of what happens to your career, whatever. I'll take the knock. You
that's
know what I'm
the
saying?
Best scene ever in that movie. That Ben. That's the best thing that Ben Affleck ever did in that movie, where
Good
he looks
hunting?
At no, it's the other one where he's a bank robber and he looks at
the town.
The town. He walks in and he goes, "We got to go do something. Some people are gonna get hurt. We may get in trouble." And his friend looks at him and he goes, "I'm in.
I'm in.
Let's just
I'm
go
in.
Like that." That's like, so I can't the, tell you why.
When just the Rogan gonna... thing went down, it disillusioned me for a long time. That was a big, those 2-3 years.
You mean when they said don't come back when, after the Carlos?
Because and, I went to mm-hmm. him first and I go, something's going on here. That's no bueno.
Mm-hmm.
Something's going on here that's not right. Tommy, something's not right.
Mm-hmm.
Here. And when he was doing that tour with Eddie Murphy's brother, John Efron and Tom Segura, they were talking bad about Rogan at the store. Tommy and all those guys were saying, when he gets back, he's not going to do 40 minutes no more on Friday nights. And you have to come to the facts that at that time, it was Rogan who was keeping those doors open on Friday
For
night.
Sure. He was the only
the
one of us
that was drawing.
That's right. I remember the night he got, was, do you remember the night that he got Fear Factor? We were all in the back celebrating because it was one of those nights that nobody was there. And all of us were in the back and just running. Yeah, in the back.
Well, you know, we were talking about Sebastian before. Like, we were a group when Sebastian didn't even talk. My wife tells stories about Sebastian and his shirts, how he would come from the Four Seasons. And
Meticulous.
And he would have cologne on, and he would hang by himself. He wouldn't say two words. We would go watch him, and he would be up there stiffer than a board.
Oh.
And look at him today.
Yeah.
Look at him today.
Yeah,
look
in his dress
today.
Pants. I know, it was fun. What about, do you remember the time that, you remember how they used to do the Playboy charity show? And it was once a year, and we do a big charity show
at
in the main room.
In the main, no, I don't think so.
Well, they used to do this charity show. It was just all these people would pay to golf in a charity thing, and then they'd come to the store. And so the next day, they had a party at the Playboy Mansion, and everybody wanted to go. But only me and Eleanor and like two of the waitresses could go because they didn't want any dudes to go, all right? And you don't remember the story, Joey? When the one girl tried to fight me and kicked me off the trampoline, that's how I got all those jokes about the girls, they're mean because they're hungry, you know, because they're the tiny little one. And she literally, I tell this in my act, but in real life, she kicked me off the trampoline and I fell down and like slid down the hill. And it's a reason, I'm the reason why they got rid of the trampoline at the Playboy Mansion, because he was afraid. I never sued anybody in my life, but he was afraid. But I couldn't walk for 3 days. You know,
no.
And it's a true story.
All this stuff is a blur, like this blur.
Yeah, well, you guys were making fun of me because I couldn't walk. I still wouldn't miss my spots, but I'm like, I fell off the trampoline at the Playboy Mansion. And the joke in my act is true from what you guys said. I go, no one believes you. You, when you can't walk after going to a party at the Playboy Mansion, it has anything to do with a trampoline accident. So, yeah, we had so much fun.
I used to go to the Playboy Mansion to do shows with the fucking crazy dude on the radio.
I don't know.
He's still on the radio. He's on the internet. He would do a yearly Playboy show.
Oh, Likas?
Tom Likas. And I got to tell you something. I think I went to the Playboy Mansion twice. I couldn't wait to get the fuck out.
It was so dirty.
And everything I did, I went home and showered both fucking
times.
And I remember telling friends of mine, like from Jersey, I went to the Playboy Mansion and I ran out of there.
Yeah.
I ran out of there. I even got invited when I was in The Longest Yard that year because we were shooting on Halloween. He came to the set with 20 girls one day.
Yeah.
And he goes, you're all invited to my Halloween party if you want to come. So it was a special longest yard bus. And you had to meet somewhere in sure, Goldberg.
And then they drove you up.
And then they drove you up. You couldn't bring
your
car.
Yeah, you can't just go.
And I was like, I wouldn't get on that fucking bus if you paid me. And people go, you had the chance to go to the Playboy Mansion and you're not going to go? Not in a million years. Both times I went, it was fucking filthy to me. Like, I just felt.
Yeah.
And something just came out about it the other day.
The grotto probably had HIV or something in it.
No, they found tapes.
Oh, boy.
Something happened. Something recently was discovered about the Playboy Mansion.
The thing is that the stories from the store back in our day, we had all, like, I feel like we were a bunch of neighborhood kids.
That's what we were.
You know, we were a bunch neighborhood of neighborhood kids.
They say it's haunted.
Well, that's for sure.
And we cheered for one another.
With the unborn children that got taken out by code. But what we had opportunities that when I stopped calling home to tell people what happened to me because they didn't believe me. You know what I mean? Like, they, first of all, they were already thrilled that, well, when I would say I was friends with Dom Irrera, they'd be like, oh my God, you know Dom Irrera. And Dice, I'm trying to get away from Dice in the back thing. And then Eddie Murphy comes in and, you know, Mitzi's showing me home movies of Richard Pryor and Sam Kinison. And you just couldn't, the opportunities and the things that we had were unbelievable because we're probably that last generation that got a piece of the legend, you know?
I got a big piece of her.
Yeah.
And it's funny, her death has changed me a little bit at mm-hmm. the store, especially my attitude. Her death, me eating a dick on a Netflix taping, and her death made me a different comic. Like
I didn't see that.
It made me go back to the store religiously. Like, now I'm just a store comic. I'm not interested in your fucking room anywhere else.
Okay.
I'm just going to the store.
All right.
I want to sharpen the fucking knife. That's where you have to go. You don't know what life is till you have to follow Ali Wong and D'Elia and Rogan and fucking Ron White and fucking, you know, you don't really know what your life is, you know. And I decided I wanted to keep my comedy up at that level. For me to keep it at that level, to go on the road and fucking lay motherfuckers out,
right.
I got to go to the store. Because I adapt my act at the Improv, and you adapt your act at the Laugh Factory. Because it's not accepted to go off the way you go off in the original room.
Right.
You know, that's what Mitzi Shore taught me. That's what she wanted. That's why she turned us into the soldiers that we are today.
Yeah.
That's why she picked us. Not for us to pussyfoot, PC it, none of that shit. She didn't believe in none of that.
No.
That's why she ran that place like she ran it. So the only thing I could do now at 56, I got nothing to lose. I was looking for a job when I found this one.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? I was looking for a job when I found this one. I'm not 40. I got a SAG pension, whatever I wanted, because I worked all those years, because I had the same problem you had.
You
were fighting. We're all fighting. I dropped out a little bit and said, they're not going to pick. I knew my fate. I didn't lie to myself. I said, I'm never going to go to Montreal. I'm never going to do the Tonight Show. I'm never going to do Letterman. I knew all these things. But I'm a regular at the store.
Yeah, yeah.
So just because I'm not a fucking Army Ranger, I'm still a fucking Marine.
Yeah, it was great what you guys did. You went around that. Like, I would have to try to be clean to do the Tonight Shows. And all those things happened.
I knew
that
all that stuff wasn't going to happen, so I went the movie route.
Yeah, that's great.
I started booking movies and TV shows. I knew, because when I moved here, they told you, get a TV show and you sell tickets on the weekend. When I got it, it changed.
I'm always the next person,
Me too.
I'm always the person. I lose to the person who gets the part. Like I don't audition much. I mean, I think in 25 years, I've had less than 100 auditions. And people who don't understand in show business, that's nothing, you know. And I think I've come close to having the part. I've gotten about 5 of those parts, maybe 10. And I think I probably come close about 60-some times.
What made you leave? What made you, once you had your son?
Yeah, because I needed him to, the real truth is that at that time, when I was pregnant, I make my living on the road. I knew that that's the only thing I can control, right? Like, and there was nobody to show me that that had been done. Now Allie's doing specials pregnant. Amy's doing specials pregnant. But when I said I was pregnant, my agent said to me, I have never seen a pregnant woman on stage. You better not tell anybody. No one's going to want to book you.
Thank God you're not with him no more.
Yeah, for sure.
He fucked up.
Well, he fucked up. I stayed with him. Well, that's when I said to him, I go, well, apparently you've never been to a really bad strip club. Like, I was like, but it was, I knew that that's what I could control. I mean, there had been people at other levels. Even now, with Amy and Allie, when they have their, they have kids, they're at a better level than I was when I was pregnant. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a road dog. I'm at the club Thursday through Saturday. What am I going to do with the kid? And then literally a man, I'm not bullshitting you, a man walked by me. I was sitting outside the doctor's office waiting for Luca to get there. And a man walked by me in a three-piece suit, a briefcase, and a Superman cape. And I was like, we got to get the fuck out of here. This is ridiculous. How do we just let, you know?
Why not go back home to Cleveland?
No, we went to New York. We went to New York, and we moved in one attached house to my mother-in-law, who at the time was insane. Insane. I went on the road one day. She sold my furniture. Threw it away. Not sold it. She got new furniture. Threw mine away. I had to go buy it back from the guy next door. I mean, because she thought her furniture was better than mine. She changed my son. And I know this is like mom shit, but she changed his formula. Stuff you don't do to other people's, you know. Just, it was hard.
How long did you stay in New York for?
3 weeks. Three, because I was like, look, I said to my husband, we had this house in Pennsylvania. I was like, I'm going there. When if you want to grow up and be a husband and a father, you can show up over there. If you don't, stay here with your mother, and we'll figure out custody. And it took him a couple of days, but he showed up. But I was like,
what made you buy that house in Pennsylvania?
I thought I was going to let my parents live there. I thought they were going to, because everybody was all separated. My brother's one place, and my one brothers were in this town, and I had friends. It's a Back to the Future town. It looks cute. I always wanted out of a small town, but I always kind of liked that small town living kind of life.
What are you close to, Pittsburgh or Philly?
Pittsburgh.
Really?
Yeah. So I get in the car, like I had to get here on Thursday. I get in the car at 2:30 in the morning because it's an hour and a half to Pittsburgh. I get up at 2:30. I get in the car at 3. I get to the airport, maybe 2 hours to the airport, depending on the weather. And then be there an hour early, catch the flight. And so, like, when I missed my spot at the store, that's because I'd been up 24 hours. By the time it's 11:30 over here, I'm up 24 hours. But it's...
No direct flights here from Pittsburgh.
No, there are, but not on my airline. And I fly so much, I got to
stick to it. What airline has a direct flight from Pittsburgh?
I think something like Spirit Airlines or American Airlines. You know, who the fuck is
that? You can't fly Spirit.
Yeah, I'm not flying that. I'm not a cheerleader, and I'm not an alcoholic.
So there's only one airline that flies direct... American used to have one.
Yeah, everywhere.
After September, they would have one. Mm. One flight a day direct.
Yeah, but I try to stay with Delta because you try to just keep your sanity. Plus, you know.
Don't say that to Tom Rhodes. He'll fucking have
one. I know. No. They made it right with Tom. They made it right with Tom. They made it right with Tom.
He did Ari's podcast, and like they made all of Ari's fans went on Delta, and they made it right.
Yeah, they made it right, and they've been doing stuff like if I get an upgrade, a first class upgrade, I will, I'll trade, and I see that they have an active military. I will trade it out with that military because, you know, the military buys seats for their people, but they're usually those ass in your face back by that don't even tilt by the restroom. So I'll trade with them and give them the first class ticket. And Delta found that out and started saying that if I had a companion, and I would say that the military person was my companion, they would allow them to have a first class seat. So they're trying to do the right thing.
Good for you, Tammy. Look at how working it.
Man, well,
this
you
is
know.
It. You got to work it, Tammy.
Well, I did 13 USO tours. Those were crazy stuff. Do you remember the time that I went over? Do you remember the time I was so scared because there was a guy that I had worked with on the road that banged a retarded girl? For real, Lee, you don't know what shit people did. I've seen some sick shit. I've seen people do blow off a sonogram. There's some sick shit that I've seen. And this dude had banged a retarded girl. And it cost me $17 a minute on my bag phone to hold it up to the club owners because I was like, can I go stay somewhere else? I don't want to hear this anymore. And when I asked him why he did it, because he was married, he said, because who's going to believe her? Right?
Jesus.
Right. So you don't see him and years go on and you don't run into him on the road. I was a feature act back then. Then I go to go overseas. I'm going to Kuwait, Iraq. It's right after September 11th. It's when it was quote unquote wartime. It's June of 2001. And they go, the other guy that you were with fell out. And here comes this motherfucker. That's the only thing I could say off the plane. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm going to die. Cause this guy's karma is so bad. I wouldn't sit next to him when we would be on the military plane. I'm like, it's going to go down. He's been banging retarded girls so his wife wouldn't know. We're going to get hit with a Scud missile.
Does a retarded girl come to a comedy show?
Yeah. She came to. You couldn't tell. She just kind of looked slow, you know, but you knew something was wrong. She was in pajamas, for God's sake. Like, he knew. There were people in a chair. He knew what was going on. This is what happened. I left the show. And I said, do you need a ride back to the condo? And he was like, no, I'm okay. And I was thinking, what a nice guy he is because he's spending time with this group, these kids that, you know, I had said hello to the wheelchair. Like, you know, I thought, wow, he must be a nice guy. And it was the first time I ever met him. And I get back to the condo. I'll never forget because it was dial-up. You know, when you had to have dial-up. And I'm on the computer. I'm in the living room. And he comes in. And I was like, oh, you had a good show. And all of a sudden, this girl comes behind him. And I thought, what? And she sat right next to me. And she'd never seen the computer. She's like, what are you doing? And he's down the hallway. And he says, I see him. And I look and make eye contact. And he says, come here. And I start to get up thinking he's going to say, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm a decent human being. So I thought a normal conversation was going to be had. Like, oh, she just needed a ride or blah, blah. And he goes, no, you. And he pointed to her. And then the most god-awful, pig-fucking, grunting, noisy, slurpy sounds you ever want to hear in your life. And I'm sitting there. It's already awkward. If somebody else is having sex and you hear it and you're in the living room, but I know what's going on. I know this dude is married. I know that this girl is slow. And I have this bag phone and I called the you know Colleen Quinn from the Omaha Funny Bone. I call her. And this is what bonded
She's
us.
A good
I go,
lady.
I go, listen. I go, now this is a different day. This is 98. I go, he's fucking a retard. Get me out of this condo. Come get me. Let me stay at your house. I'll sleep on the couch. I'll sleep on your porch. Just get me out of this condo. I'm not staying. And then when he showed up in Iraq, I was like, I'm going to die. I'm just going to die because his karma is so bad that something bad is going to happen to us. And thank God I made it out of there.
But and you still do the USO tours still?
Domestically, I'll go down. They're everywhere. You go to Huntsville, Alabama. You go anywhere. Lots of Alaska stuff. They're all in Alaska. You go up there where they have secret mission bases. Yeah.
I sent the tape.
We just got to do our own. We got
to
do our own.
I had a guy that used to bother me from the comedy.
Scott Kennedy. Remember Scotty Kennedy?
No, but God rest his soul.
God rest his soul.
Is that who got you in?
No, that he did his own.
He did his own. But there was another guy that would come to. When I first got to the store, the first 2 or 3 years, 97 to maybe 2001, there were people who went down. There was one guy who used to book Rotterdam.
Yes, I went to that
Thursday
show.
Night,
I did
the
that
TV show.
Do the Thursday,
and then Friday you do Amsterdam, and it's sold out.
Mm-hmm.
And you come back on Saturday. They stopped me at the fucking Kennedy Airport, and they were like, "Ma'am,
you can't go."
No.
Oh man, me, Jessica Kirsten, and Mike. I can't think of Mike.
Remember that? Yeah, he used to at the store.
Yeah, I did it.
He would come up to you.
It was
on kind
of like,
and go, "What are you doing in 2 weeks? You got a passport? Yeah, you're going to Amsterdam.
Yeah, you're going to Amsterdam.
That's how fast it was. No drama, no paperwork, no fucking tape, nothing." He would just see you at the store.
Damn.
And then there was another guy.
And it was creepy, too. I'm like, is this slavery? Like, I don't know what this is.
Yeah, it was cool. You they sent the contract.
Yeah.
They were real.
But you didn't know if it was real, like, until. And that was the good news. Like, somebody went. I forgot who went first.
He had to call you long distance or something.
Somebody went first and made it okay for us because it seemed creepy. Like, I'm like, we're going to get over there. And nobody's coming back.
So much weed. This guy told me a bunch of stories. I'm going to take it to a cafe. Where you could drink the THC and the coffee.
Yeah.
I mean, he just like, oh, my head was going to blow up. I'm like, oh.
And I remember saying, I'll never forget saying to Ari, I go, it's going to be like that movie, The Game, where they're bringing us over there to hunt us. Like, they're people, you think you're going to do comedy and they're just going to let you run and try to shoot you. This is what this is.
That's right. You would do the TV show in Rotterdam. Did you ever get a copy of it?
Never. There's so much shit that we did that I don't have. I did The World Stands Up in London. I remember going all those places by myself, being miserable. Because you think it's all glamorous, but you're by yourself going everywhere. And you can't even take pictures of stuff. I have these great pictures. I remember showing my son these pictures of all these great places, but you're not in them. Because it's not, you try to take a selfie, but your eyeball off to the side. Like, you could never line that camera up.
Selfies, yeah.
Yeah.
She just took one out, and I was watching an episode of Narcos on the plane. She took out one of those thin ones that you used to.
Yeah, the 110. Yeah, remember a flash cube? You had to have a cube. Crazy.
How long have you been doing comedy for now, Ted?
25 years.
25.
Don't you think I should have a better career by now?
No. You look good.
Oh, you're
You have a child. You're married.
Yeah, yeah.
You're not strung out on drugs. You didn't fuck 80 comics. You didn't. There's no bad footage of you. You never said nothing wrong. You proved yourself at the store. I mean, you have had a tremendous career.
Yeah.
Listen, there's a lot of women, bro, that their ovaries call.
Yeah.
Once the ovaries come calling, a woman, there's not much she could do. I'm not a sexist. I'm not a sexist pig. I'm just telling you the truth. I've been around comedy for so long that you see these women that are gung-ho, 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 fight, scratch, tooth and nail, tooth and... They meet a guy.
Yeah, but that's what it was about. A ruse to get a man.
Then they stop. You stop seeing them. The guy's like a writer.
Yeah.
He doesn't want her out doing comedy. He knocks her up. They have the kid. You bump into in a commercial audition 8 years later.
When she's divorced and going back to comedy.
Or she's telling you that, whatever. So I understand the ovaries. I understand the need for a woman to come out and be herself. I mean, how many condos can you stay at and balls can you smell? You're in a condo with two men. Their feet are out.
Well, I got pregnant by accident. I didn't get pregnant. I mean, God bless. And my son's not going to watch this, but eventually one day I'll tell him. But I remember I was in Montreal and I called Luca.
How long were you dating Luca before you?
2.5 years.
Really?
Yeah. So we were living together and we were talking about a future and we were, but I just wasn't that. Obviously, I wasn't that girl who wanted to get married.
Right.
That wasn't my thing.
The ovaries hadn't called yet.
Yeah, no. And I thought, I couldn't picture doing this the way I did it with a kid because I know what I wanted, what standards I have for a child, right? Like, I'm not a filth. I knew I needed to take care of that kid. If I had a TV show or something, I could have seen popping a kid out. I would have planned it. But not on the road. Like, what am I going to do? I couldn't figure it out. So, but I was in Montreal. I'll never forget this. And, everybody goes out till 4 or 5 o'clock in the morning in Montreal, that we'd go crazy in Canada, all the comics. And I was going to bed at like 1:30 and Dom was calling me going, it's come out. So-and-so's here. So-and-so's here. And I'm like, I called Luca and I said, I think I'm either pregnant or I'm dying. Like, I don't know what's going on, but something is wrong with me. And I flew in and I got a test. And he got all excited and I was crying. It was like the opposite of like regular life. You know how people, usually dudes are like, oh shit, what are we going to do? And women are excited. I was like, I was crying because I just couldn't understand. I was 15 years a comic. Like, what's going to happen? It was just different. It's just different time. I still don't know how it balances out. I still lose time with my son, but I do the best I can by everybody,
I have sat here for 22 years and saw comics destroy careers, destroy marriages, and destroy themselves. I saw it. I've seen it. We could sit here for hours and tell you.
Yeah.
When I walked in that day and Terry told me I knocked her up, I was ready to jump off a bridge. I didn't know what to think. We were just starting a podcast, maybe.
A year into it or something.
Yeah, I was doing it with Felicia, I think. Or we were doing it already.
Finished it with Felicia. We had started.
I just didn't know what to expect. And I remember telling her at the Habit when she was 8 months pregnant that I don't know what you're going to expect from me as a man. I don't know what even to give you at this age. I'm trying to be a fucking comic.
Yeah.
And, but the truth of the matter is, at that time, Terry's income was fucking keeping us in pork chops.
Yeah.
You know, I was making a little money, but it was her income together that we were putting the pieces together. I had, because of the drug addiction, I had major loans. I had a loan that was $630 a month for 6 years before child support, before rent.
Yeah.
I had to come up with $630 every month, you know.
Isn't that so crazy?
Let's do it. And now you have all these opportunities. And it's like I turned them down to be with my daughter.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want a fucked up kid walking around Hollywood.
No.
I don't want my kid at the Comedy Store in 20 years, you know, looking.
Unless they want to be, right?
No,
yeah.
No, no.
Yeah.
I don't want her looking for answers.
Yeah.
That's why I write in a log for her every other
day. Oh, do you? That's good.
You have to, because if I die, I want her to hear it from the horse's fucking mouth.
Oh, that's awesome.
Not to hear it from somebody else's fucking mouth.
You know, I have never, like, look, I never thought I was like I never thought I was a legend. Wait.
Do you want another one?
I never thought I was great. I never thought of that. But I will say this, that my comedy has never been better.
Yes.
Because all the fluff is taken off. I realized that prior to having these two men in my life, you know, my husband and my son, that's all I had was stand-up. That was my life. I would talk at people at night. That's why we were such a good family, because we saw each other. We could physically see each other. I now don't care. I don't care about fame. I need people to know me enough to buy tickets to come to my show. I work around. This one made me lose my agent, I worked around it. My priority is taking care of my family. And now that even means my parents. You know what I mean? My priority is taking care of them. Comedy is the beautiful thing that allows me to take care of them. So I use it for what it's supposed to be, and I've never been funnier. And my perspective is clear, and I think I've never known who I am more as I sit here this moment, so that translates on stage. I appreciate when people come and I get to do 45 minutes, an hour, and take them out of their life, because I get it. I got to get out of my problems, too.
You know, it's a couple of weeks ago, they had a thing that the New York Times put Dave Attell as the best club comic.
Yes, I saw that.
And for a long time, until about a year ago, Dave was kind of struggling on the road, numbers-wise. And I remember saying it on the podcast, going, guys, just because somebody doesn't have a podcast or somebody isn't good on social media doesn't mean that they're not a great comedian.
Right.
I go, a lot of these comics are they're not selling tickets, but that doesn't mean they're still not deadly comics. You're a deadly comic. Jimmy Schubert's a deadly comic. Don Morera's a deadly comic. There's comics that just because they don't have a podcast doesn't mean you're not going to go support them. You might have a better time at their fucking shows than when you have at my show with a podcast.
No, not your show.
That's the truth. That you guys never stopped. You never stopped.
No, you can't
stop. You were Comedy Store trained. That's like, you know, you had intimate conversations with Mitzi Shore. She told you what she expected from you. She would tell you. She'd tell you something that was, put the handcuff on and come out like Fidel Castro.
Remember, she was like, come out with a glass of wine and just be like you're a little drunk. But do you remember when she got upset? I'll never forget this. I wasn't getting spots for a while. Like, it's been like 2 years, and I was regular spots. You know us. And because nobody was there, Lee, like, we got spots. You could get two spots a night if you wanted sometimes. Like, you got spots every single night. You say, okay, what are you home? And you got it every single night. She, for a while, wasn't giving me spots. We're trying to figure it out. And I remember Duncan, why she wouldn't give me spots? And she thought I was that other Italian girl. That Julia Rossi, do you remember her? She got confused for a little bit, and because she had two of everything, right? What does Eleanor say? It was like Noah's Ark or something.
Right, right, right.
And she thought I was Julia Rossi for a little bit, and then I don't know who sat her down to tell her. Maybe Eleanor, and said, "No, that's Tammy. That's not. You're getting confused." Oh,
okay. Yeah. I mean, no, Tammy. I always give comics the respect they deserve. I love watching, like, I love going to the store and getting high and sitting there in the back where Mitzi used to sit and watching The Art of Comedy, and nobody stops getting funny. They get funnier.
Yeah, for sure.
The more you go on stage, you get funnier.
Yeah.
You know, you said that you were dropping a DVD later next year, a special throughout the year later on. But coming up in a few weeks, May 3rd, you're dropping out a CD.
Yeah.
It's Throwback Tammy.
Yeah.
On iTunes?
Yeah, iTunes. It'll be, you know, Pandora, whatever you want to, however you want to get it. I don't even know. Probably my uncles have it copied in the trunk, you know, that kind of stuff.
Tammy, it's... I'm happy you reached out or whoever to get you on the podcast. I was dying to see you.
You're the first one of all our group. And it made me so happy. And I said, of course, you were my intro to the store. You would be the first one, you know?
What do you think about Brennerts being in Cleveland?
I love it because he's only an hour and a half away. My son calls him Uncle Brett.
Really?
Yeah, we're going to have some good times. We're going to have some good times. Yeah, it's all of it.
How's the winter by you?
What's even worse, though, you want to know what I really, you know what I'm going through now more than anything? Is that my relatives are saying to me, Sebastian is my favorite comedian. And I'm like, fuck you. I love Sebastian too, but how dare you tell me that he's your favorite comedian? Like, you, but, and then I went, I'm like, I get it. I get it. You got to bow down to it.
Let me tell you something, man. I had 20 friends that called me when Sebastian was at the Garden looking for tickets, and my feelings did not get hurt.
No, of course not. I told you, I was there crying.
Did Luca go with you?
No, he's not always going. He's been sick, and you know, but I went by myself, and I got to see him backstage, and he's walking in, and I said to him, buddy, I go, this is just like walking into the Comedy Store. It's exactly what I said. I think it might even be on his DVD. I go, but you're walking into this place the same way you walked into the Comedy Store. And then he rose. I told you this, but he rose out of the middle of the Garden with pyrotech. And I'm standing up, and I was around people that weren't like the civilians, you know? And I'm crying, and just tears are coming. People probably think this broad is crazy stalker or something. But just to see that, my heart just
you're
exploded
so proud.
With love.
Like, yeah, you see him at the original room, dying in the back.
Yeah.
Trying to figure
it
out.
You're doing it for us. Like, you're doing it for us. Like, I can only...
No, I cheer for all my comrades. You know, listen, man, like I say, every time you move up, I move up.
Yeah, I want to be your wife on something, though, or your crazy sister.
Every time I move up, you move up. When you're an open mic, a guy gets a special, you're friends with that guy, you move up a little bit because everybody elevates.
Yeah, it unclogs the drain.
Everybody elevates, you know, so you cannot walk around with a chip or hating people or giving yourself excuses. I'm very proud of you. I got to be honest with you that you kept it together. You went out there. You built a family. You know, I mean, this is what being a comic is all about, is growing with the time.
Yeah, well.
You know, look at the ones who got stale. They're stale. There's comics that are stale. They're still living in Woodland Hills, sharing an apartment, doing things that, because they didn't have the right mind to go, you know what? I did my time. I did everything I could do. Let me bow out of here like a gentleman.
Yeah.
Go to a small town, take the little money I have with me.
That's so funny.
You know what I'm saying? I could still do my little gigs from time to time. You know that I'm 57 years old. What do you want me to tell you? I'm 56. What do you want me to tell you? You want me to tell you that I'm not going to be nothing.
Yeah,
in
but
you. 2 years, I won't be able to fucking walk.
They can never stop. That's not 2 years. It's going to be a long time, God forbid. But they can't stop it. Like, first of all, I love it. Now it's in my blood. There's never been anything I've been addicted to more than comedy. Like, that's it. Like, I love the freedom of saying it. So you're not going to stop me. You might not pay me as much as I feel like I need to be paid, but I'm always going to work. I'm always going to work. I'll do those Mr. Saturday night gigs to the old people homes down in Florida, you know, if I have to. Well, remember the Billy Crystal movie? I'll do it. I'll age in. I'll show up in my suitcase and skate and just stay there and no one will know. But you can't stop people like me and you who are hustlers. Like, we're in the good way hustlers. Like, I never screwed anybody over. I never robbed it. But like, you can take away, you can, you know, you can put a fatwa on my head and you can take away my agent and you can take away, and the industry can shun me and drop. But you know what? I worked around it. I just went and made the call. I know how to figure it out. You make the calls yourself. You go around it. You keep going because ultimately The jokes will speak for themselves. And as long as people keep buying tickets, and I'm supposed to give you a good show, and I want to give you a good show. And that's, you can't trick the public. And I keep coming back to that. But grassroots campaigns aren't allowed anymore. You know, in the old days, you'd build, and the clubs would build with you. Now they want you to walk in. Like someone said to me, a club owner goes, well, Aziz tweeted and sold out in 6 minutes. And I said, well, there's a fucking billion of his people. He should sell out. He's a very funny comic. He's been on a lot of things. He should. He deserves to sell out. But don't compare me to Aziz. That's not a fair comparison, right? So you have to just have to know your role. That's you have to do. And I think I...
What are your May dates?
In Portland at Harvey's.
Okay, what date?
The 16th through the 19th.
Okay, what else you got in May?
Yeah, I think I'm at a theater in Pittsburgh, Zillion Opal. So yeah, so I'm busy. I'm in the first week of May. I'm in a theater in Virginia, Friday, Saturday in Vienna, Virginia. I can't think of the name of the theater.
You still got a website?
Yeah, Pescatelli.com.
That's it. That's all it. You need to go.
I get skywriting. I have a guy come knock on your door and tell you where I'm gonna be. I'm doing the None of Your Business tour. Where you don't worry about where I'm going to be.
Dates. I'll let you know that day.
That's
right?
Our tour. Don't worry about where I'm going to be.
Tammy, anytime you come out to LA, you're always welcome on the show.
I love you.
Your family. I'm happy.
Give your wife my love. Kiss that baby.
Kicking these motherfuckers in the ass with that Comedy Store blood, and send your best.
I will. Husband and family. I love you, my brother.
Thank you very much, you filthy fucking animals. And now for a word from our sponsors.
Yo, so I want to thank Tammy Pascatelli, the Christ Killer, and you motherfuckers for supporting the podcast always while I'm in New York City trying to put it together. I'll be around the city this week doing spots. I don't know what nights, but check up with Dangerfields. I just go in there and do a 20-minute little workout just to keep the fucking muscles going. But I want to give a word to our sponsors. Don't forget, the real pros in your life are your moms. And May 12th is Mother's Day. Right around the corner, do not forget. Let me ask you a quick question. Where would you be without your mom? Me, I don't have a mom. So if I had a mom, I'd be sending her everything in the world. You understand me? As far as my wife's concerned, she's getting 22,000 different things. Why? Because I appreciate it as a mom. Pro Flowers lets you choose from a variety of bouquets and vases that suit every mom's style. All you got to do is pick the delivery date, then Pro Flowers will carefully package your flowers and deliver them fresh from the farm. Express delivery means her flowers stay fresh. What else can you do for your mom? This is the one thing that they love. Right now, we're going to get you one dozen assorted roses for $19.99. Double the roses and get a premium vase for just $9.99 more. What that? Listen, you can't beat that. She's going to jump up and down for weeks. You understand me? How we start this is you got to visit proflowers.com and click the microphone on the upper right corner and enter promo code HAPPENING, HAPPENING. That's proflowers.com. Click the microphone on the right corner and use promo code HAPPENING, HAPPENING. Mother's Day is May 12th, so do not wait. Get on this today. Order like a pro and get this amazing rose deal to thank all the moms in your life. That's proflowers.com. Click in HAPPENING on the upper right corner, and Uncle Joey takes care of you again. The church is also brought to you by CBDLion.com. Listen, you don't have to bang your heads. With all these stores and bodegas selling CBDs, you don't know what you're getting today. Go to CBDLion.com. Look at their third-party test results. Whether you want to smoke it, vape it, rub it, use the tinctures, CBDLion is the way to go, and it keeps me together. Do you understand me? So right now, go to CBDLion.com and press in church and get 20% off your first order. You cannot beat that. You cannot beat that. Go to CBDLionRightNow.com, press in church, and get 20% off your first order. That's another tremendous Mother's Day gift. When they cook their arm, their back, get them some CBDLion.com right now. Press church. Also, for Mother's Day, 23andMe. This Mother's Day, for a limited time only, 23andMe is taking $30 off their health and ancestry kit. Give mom a gift that's truly unique. With 23andMe Health and Ancestry Kit, she could discover how her genes may influence her health and more with under 125 personalized genetics reports that feature information on her traits and health like genetic weight, caffeine consumption, sleep, movement, and more. With 23andMe personalized wellness reports, she can learn how her genes play a role in her well-being and lifestyle choices, whether it's how her weight may be impacted by saturated fat or her likelihood for being lactose intolerant and more. Mom is sure to discover a whole new way of understanding who she is, and you can share it together. You can see who you're related to and whatnot. This is a tremendous offer. So this Mother's Day, get 30% off 23andMe's Health Ancestry Kit at 23andme.com/church. Say C-H-U-R-C-H. That's number 23andme.com/church. And remember, the offer ends May 13th. I want to thank Tammy Pascatelli. I want to thank the Christ Killer. I want to thank you guys for bearing me with me at this time where I'm shooting films, doing podcasts, doing stand-up. You're going down that road with me. Have a great week. This is the way to start your week off right. Kick this motherfucking Mule Lee.